We are now at another one of the 12 forests of Vrindavan. And the name of that forest is? Palavan. I just got a Palavan 101 education about what tal fruits are like. I'm going to ask Hari Leela to describe this for you.
Hare Krishna. This is a very amazing fruit. Most of us would have seen it in summer season, the commonly available, just like the tender coconut, small things which are sold in the market. In Andhra Pradesh, they call it Tati Munjulu. So that's the summer, early summer part when it's very hot. But the same fruit, when it ripens on the tree, the outer casing, which is originally very hard, it becomes pulpy and it gives a very, very fragrant smell. And the inside thing which we normally take for the water part of it, that becomes the seed. So it's a very wonderful fruit. It's the tal fruit. It's very fragrant, very, very fragrant. In fact, my experience was that there was only one fruit in quite a big place and the entire place was fragrant with the smell of that fruit. Hare Krishna.
So when we hear how enthusiastic the cowherd boys were to enjoy the very luscious, fragrant, sweet tal fruits, gives us just something of an idea. I don't have any experience with tal fruits, where one fruit makes the whole house smell sweet. What to speak of a whole forest? That these forests of Vraja, besides we know them as being very sacred, it was the playground of Krishna and Balaram, the cowherd boys, and all the cows and calves that they would herd every day. The description in the 10th canto, or Krishna book, begins with describing how playful the cowherd boys were in the course of their day of herding the cows. It gives us an idea of Krishna's nature. The teaching that Prabhupada has given us is that whatever we find in this world, it exists here because it has its spiritual counterpart. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, in the description of the banyan tree, where the branches are growing down and the roots are growing up. You don't find trees where branches are growing down and roots growing up, except in a reflection, where in the reflection of a tree, in water, on a lake, in the reflection, the roots are growing up and the branches are growing down. So this material world is just a reflection of the spiritual world. Like in the Bhagavatam verse the other morning, where the Supreme Lord appeared as Lord Varaha to kill Hiranyakashipu. He's described there as Adi Shukara, the original boar. So where do the forms of boar come from? From the spiritual world, from the Supreme. Where does the playfulness of little children, where does that come from? Comes from Krishna Balaram. Where does the attraction between young boy and young girl, where does that come from? It comes from Radha and Krishna. Whatever exists in this realm has its pure manifestation in the spiritual realm. So in hearing about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram in Vraja, we're hearing the pure form of what may seem like frivolous play, but it's an exchange of love between Krishna, Balaram, and his devotees. Just like even before they begin their play for the day, some of you may have read the BBT translation of Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And Brihat Bhagavatamrita describes Krishna's going out to herd the calves with his cowherd boys. And how intense is the love and affection of Nanda and Jasoda and the elder gopas and gopis. They're so much attached to Krishna in their parental affection that they don't want to lose that presence of Krishna. This month of Kartik has many, many wonderful festival days in it. One of them is Gopastami. Gopastami is a festival when the inauguration of Krishna and Balaram taking the cows out into the pasture ground. He graduated into that stage of his life. So a big festival, Gopastami festival. Krishna becomes Gopa, Gopa Kumar, to herd the cows. So all the elders came and made wonderful presentations. Some gave Krishna a new flute. Some gave Krishna some special turban to wear. Some gave Krishna a nice chadar to wear. Some gave Krishna different buffalo horn so he could blow the buffalo horn and call the cows, and little lati, little stick for controlling the cows. So much nice gifts. This is described in Gopal Champu, the celebration of Gopastami. Mother Jasoda, she presented Krishna with some very beautiful shoes and a little umbrella. And it describes in detail those shoes, little sparkling, almost like mirrors on the side of the shoes. And with the toes going, whoop. I've seen those in Rajasthan. You've seen? Curled up. So she presented the shoes to Krishna and the umbrella to Krishna very happily, because she's Mother Jasoda. She doesn't want her little Lala to go out into the forest with sharp stones and thorns. And Krishna refused. Krishna said, how is it that we're cowherds, we're to protect the cows, and I wear shoes, and they have no shoes? I will accept these shoes if you provide for each one of Nanda Maharaj's cows same shoes, because their feet may hurt also. And then the umbrella. How I can have an umbrella if they don't have an umbrella? You provide umbrella and someone to carry the umbrella for each of the cows, then I'll take an umbrella. because our life is to protect the cows. Such love Mother Jasoda has for Krishna, and such love Krishna has for the cows. So as in Brihat Bhagavatamrita it describes, making all the arrangements, Mother Jasoda packed sumptuous lunch for Krishna, fed him sumptuously for breakfast because her little boy doesn't want him to be hungry. And so he smiled and said, it's time to go, the cows are mooing. The cowherd boys are blowing their horns, I must go now, mother. Very well. And Krishna walked a few feet and Mother Jasoda ran up and said, no, wait, let me adjust your dhoti here, let me fix this. Sat him in front of her, okay, now you can go. Took a few steps, no, let me fix your turban. It's not on right, let me fix your turban. Then she ran back to the house and got some more kachoris and put them in Balaram's lunchbox. Make sure that Krishna, if he gets hungry, he has something more. And again, 5-6 times, Mother Jasoda running after Krishna. No, wait. Because she had such affection, she didn't want to be without her little son's association. And the cowherd boys were saying, come on, Krishna, let's go. And Krishna would say, very well, mother, but I have to go. It's time to go herd the cows. And finally he left. And the description is that all the residents of Vrindavan town would watch as Krishna went into the forest. They could no longer see his form. They could just see the dust raised from the hooves of the cows as they went into the forest and the pasturing grounds. And they stood there like statues, with their hearts feeling intense separation from Krishna. That's the Vatsalya group. But the Sakya group, this is their time. And they were so enthralled with playing with Krishna that as they were going deeper and deeper into the forest, Prabhupada describes that actually all they did was play. And because the cows had the same affection in their particular rasa for Krishna, they just followed Krishna wherever he went. Sometimes they would see the birds flying in the sky and the birds would be casting a shadow onto the ground and they would go running after the shadow of the birds. Then another boy would make the motion of a bird and make shadows on the ground and another boy would follow the shadow on the ground. Sometimes they would come by a lake or a pond and one of the boys would stand on one leg like a crane dipping to get the fish into the water. And another boy would stretch his leg, one leg back and one leg forward, making like the peacock, spreading his peacock feathers. And some other boys would make a loud roaring sound like a wild big animal, like a lion. And the other boys would run like the deer, leaping, just imitating the movements of the animals and the birds in the forest. One boy would sit like a frog and make the sound, croaking sound like a frog. I can't make that sound. And then jump like a frog. And then jump like a frog. Then jump like a frog. Then another boy would come and jump over the frog like a frog. Just playing. Sometimes Krishna would lean up against a tree and play upon his flute. And all the cows would stop chewing the grass with their ears perked up just to catch the sound of Krishna's flute playing. And the cowherd boys would gather around Krishna just like petals of a lotus, listening completely enchanted to the sound of Krishna's flute. The birds flying in the air would stop flying and come crashing to the ground, stunned at hearing the sound of Krishna's flute. Sometimes they'd play a game of throwing one fruit from a fruit tree, throwing it up in the air and trying to hit it with another fruit as it fell to the ground. And they could do this for hours. Sometimes they'd play tag. Sometimes they put a blindfold on one of the cowherd boys, spin him around three times, and have him move around with his arms out, and all the other cowherd boys had to stand still till he found one of the cowherd boys, and then by touching the features of the boy, tried to name who that cowherd boy was. So many games they would play all day long. Just play and play and play and play and play. And going deeper and deeper into the forest, and the cows enjoying just being in Krishna's company. In this way, one day when the cowherd boys were in the Talavan forest, where we are now, some of the cowherd boys came and reported to Krishna and Balaram. There's this wonderful forest nearby with many, many tall trees with so many fruits, and Krishna and Balaram, the fruits are so fragrant. The whole forest is filled with such wonderful scent, and these fruits were sure. They're very sweet. We're wanting some of those fruits. Can you help us get some of those fruits? We want to go, but there's one terrible demon named Dainuka. And he lives in that forest, and he's very envious. He doesn't allow any living entity to come in that forest and enjoy those fruits. Not only us as humans, but no animals, no birds, not even insects. Dainuka is so cruel and so envious. He keeps everyone away. He wants to enjoy for himself. But the fruits are irresistibly fragrant and sweet. Krishna Balaram, can you help us get some of those fruits? Krishna turned to Balaram, let us go. Each of the time there were demons, Krishna and Balaram knew, or at least Krishna knew, that because there were some circumstances like with Prahlambas, or Balaram made like he didn't know, or Yogamaya was covering so he apparently didn't know who Prahlamba was. But he knew who Dainuka was. And they went straight to these very, very tall trees. And Balaram grabbed one of the biggest ones of them, and with his strength, he shook the tree. And as he shook the tree, many, many fruits came falling to the ground. And the cowherd boys were very happy, picking up the fruits, getting ready to enjoy the fruits. But the sound made by the tree shaking and the tall fruits falling was heard by Dainuka, who became very, very angry. Who has come into my forest to take my fruits? and galloping, charging with great speed, he came running into the forest, followed by his other ass demon friends. And when he saw Balaram standing there smiling, leaning against the tree that he had just shaken, he came charging right at him and turned around and, as asses have a practice of doing, kicked very hard with his rear feet, hooves, and kicked Balaram right in the chest. Balaram didn't move a fraction of an inch. Just smiled. He didn't even say, ouch. Which made Dainuka even more angry. So he took another pass at Balaram and charged at Balaram. And Balaram, there's different versions of this pastime. I'll just narrate the one that's found in the Bhagavatam, but the one that's Rupa Goswami describes is very exciting. I'll do that as part two. He grabbed Dainukasura by the hind legs as he tried to kick him and threw him to the ground. Stunned Dainukasura. So Dainukasura got up, because demons are very determined, and charged again. Next time, Balaram took him and twirled him around and around and around and threw him up into the top of one of the tall trees. And he was so heavy, Dainuka was so big, that the tall tree crashed into another tall tree, which crashed into another tall tree, which crashed into another tall tree, and broken tall trees all over the forest. And the sound of all the tall trees crashing and the thrashing of Dainuka brought the other ass demons, and they all came charging at Krishna and Balaram, and they did the same thing. As they turned around to kick them, they grabbed their hind legs and threw them around and around and around and around, and by centrifugal force, they lost their life. The Bhagavatam describes as they were multicolored demons that looked like multicolored clouds in the sky, decorating the tops of the tall trees. And the cowherd boys exclaimed, "Well done, well done. Let us enjoy the tall fruits now. Wait till we tell everybody when we get back to Braja what Krishna and Balaram did today." In Rupa Goswami's description, he describes that Krishna threw Dainuka, Balaram threw Dainuka a long distance, and he went crashing to the ground. And when he came back, he lost consciousness. When he came back, he charged again, even stronger. So when Balaram threw him to the ground the second time, the cowherd boys each came with their sticks. Some were punching him, some were kicking him, some were hitting him with their sticks. Some were pulling his tail and slapping him in the face and trying to help Balaram deal with this demon. And they were strong. Then he got up and charged again. By Krishna's destroying Dainuka, it demonstrates how kind Krishna is and taking away the ass-like propensities of living entities, the load-bearing propensities, the I have to work hard mentality of the conditioned living entity, which we find very strong in material society. Persons work very, very hard. I would say if anybody here has done some book distribution in wherever you are, as I have done, you will have heard this hundreds and hundreds of times. I have no time. I don't have time for this. I have to work hard. Or they'll say it the other way around. They'll say, get a job. You should work hard. You should be an ass like me. Because what is life without working hard for material affairs of life? I recently had an experience, well, two recent experiences that I found astonishing. One was I had, it was a couple years ago, I made a commitment to visit somebody, to visit a temple on Christmas Day. And I had an evening program on Christmas Eve. So without the details, I had a very, very early flight. I mean, I left our New York temple at something like 5 o'clock in the morning. And as I was driving at 5 o'clock in the morning, I saw at a car wash near the temple a line of cars about 20 cars long at 5 o'clock in the morning on Christmas morning in America, in New York City. That, my God, people can't give up trying to enjoy 5 o'clock in the morning on Christmas morning. And then when I got to the airport, there was a line at 5:30 in the morning, a line of people waiting to check in that was filling up, it was so long, it filled up the whole front lobby and went out into the sidewalk outside the airport at 5:30 in the morning. I nearly missed my flight because there was so many people to just check in. And then there was it was one of those flights that I had to make a change of planes in one city. And when I got off the plane, because it was in a Western time zone, so it was an hour earlier, it was now about 7 o'clock in the morning in Minneapolis, in the transit lounge of Northwest. And the whole place was filled with people just sitting around eating in all of those eating places in airports. At 7 o'clock in the morning, on Christmas morning. I thought, my God, these American people, they're so determined to enjoy. They're suffering so much at 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, on Christmas morning. Instead of having, you know, a religious holiday. That's what it is. It's the biggest religious holiday. And they're off just sense gratification X, Y, and Z. Unbelievable. Then another situation that happened very recently. I was going from Penn State University. Those of you that are from America, you know where that is. It's in mid-Pennsylvania and kind of like off in the mountains of nowhere. And the flight that I had to get to was in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the state capital. Like, you know, normally, like an hour and a half's drive. But it was an early morning flight, so I had to leave early. And the roadway was, it was a, you know, the, a, two lanes each way divided highway, it was packed with cars on a weekday at 5 o'clock in the morning. It was like rush hour. From nowhere to somewhere at 5 o'clock in the morning. I thought, this is going to be terrible. When we get to somewhere, it's going to be terrible, you know, double packed. But even nowhere, packed. What to speak of places in India? Big cities in India in the early morning hours. I once had to visit the Juhu Temple, and they suggested, I had come by train from somewhere, rather than going, those of you that are from Bombay would know, rather than going by car, it's much better if you go by train because it takes less time to go from the train station to the Juhu Temple than going by car. It'll take you 2 to 3 times more. So I got on the train, and I didn't know what would happen. It was rush hour. And I started in car number 1, and I ended up in car number 4 without walking. Just by getting pushed by the people trying to get in car 1, because they were trying to get on the, you know, each stop. I had never had such an experience. I'd been in subways in New York at rush hour, but never like that. Unbelievable. And that was so many years ago. What is it like now? Or Calcutta, at, you know, rush hour, trying to get across the Howrah Bridge to the Howrah Station. Forget it, rush hour. It's madhouse. Etc., etc. This is Dhenuka. Modern Dhenuka. In the Tal forest, trying to get and to enjoy the Tal fruits, and no one else should enjoy the Tal fruits. The envious spirit of working very hard, like the ass, which we don't have in the West, but which exists here in India, certainly in villages. Prabhupada would speak about it many times. Apparently, as a small boy who saw, he would describe, literally, tons or big, huge loads billowing down the side of whatever it was. Prabhupada would often say laundry. The washerman would pile up the ass, big pile of clothes, take the ass to the washing place and pile them up again at the end of the day and bring it back home. For what? Got to work hard. Got to get that morsel of grass so I can have something to eat. Which Prabhupada would say, look on either side of the road and you'll see abundant grass. Why are you working so hard? I got to work hard so I can get that morsel of grass. I can get that enjoyment. This mentality. I could go on and on and on about it. I just received a letter just yesterday from someone who is describing they've got this, they're in a something-something education program where they have to work 10 to 12 hours a day just to get that piece of grass. That PhD. What's the PhD for? So they can get, you know, a morsel and a half of grass. What should I do, Maharaj? Go to the Tal forest. Find Krishna and Balaram and have them kill that Dhenukasura. Liberate you from that mentality. Because it interferes, that mentality interferes with taking shelter of Krishna in a feeling way, in a mood of devotion. Got to work hard. Even so, as devotees, we have our ways of addressing these things. But the non-devotee, the asura, this is their life. And Krishna is kind upon the asura also. He takes away that mentality, or at least lets them understand the futility. Gives them plenty of opportunity to understand that futility. And in the life of devotee, Krishna is very kind and Krishna helps us become freed from that mentality by his kindness. And he shows that to his devotees, to the cowherd boys. And one very nice thing of this pastime is that there are two demons, specifically in the Braja Leela, where Balaram kills the demons instead of Krishna. Have you noted? There's two. Denukasura and Pralambasura. Here's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. That the demons that Krishna kills is Krishna's reciprocation with the devotee for obstacles on the path of devotional service Krishna removes. But there are these two where the devotee has to turn to Balaram, and with the effort, as we discussed, prayasa, the effort to try to overcome this obstacle, the devotee must strive to overcome this obstacle on the instruction of the scripture and the spiritual master. Then Balaram gives the strength, because within the instruction comes the strength to carry out the instruction. We need not become beasts of burden or over-endeavorers for ordinary things of life. This is one of our Vaishnava teachings. We accept those things which come in a natural way, and we don't over-endeavor for things otherwise. Even, let's say, like something, the example that Prabhupada would give, even of constructing a nice temple. This is a lesson that Prabhupada, I saw it in letters that Prabhupada was writing to the devotees in New York, when there was an idea to move from where we were to some other place. And Prabhupada's concern was that we not put ourselves in a position where each month, the third week into the month, we're in anxiety, how we're going to meet the payments. Don't do that. Don't be denukas. He didn't say like that in the letter, but that's the message. Where we're over-endeavoring for something. Now, Prabhupada certainly gave challenges to the devotees. The building of the Mayapur temple and the Vrindavan temple and the Juhu temple. He taxed us to strive. But not to the point where it was disrupting our spiritual lives and our devotional practice. And that the spiritual purpose was not for material gain. The spiritual purpose was, his life was short and he wanted to leave behind, just as, I mean, look at the Krishna Balaram Mandir today. How many people are getting spiritual benefit by coming there? That if we just sat under a tree, the same would not happen. So Prabhupada understood what a beautiful temple for Krishna would provide in Vrindavan. So this is a very peaceful place. We're being very much benefited by the pujaris and the devotees maintaining this place, providing such a nice, cool, pleasant scene. Nice big lake over here on this side, and we don't see too many tall trees anymore. But one can only imagine the abundant tall trees with nice fragrant fruits. The cowherd boys want to enjoy and offer to Krishna. Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai.